Hello, you're listening to Coastal Cafe. My name is Aaron Barnett, and I'll be your host today. Coastal Cafe is a joint production of the University of Washington Sea Grant Program and KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. Today we're talking with Will Patrick from Rivers Without Borders, and we're going to be talking about an issue that has impact and ramifications on people who live along the whole entire coast, from Alaska to California. And even though his agency focuses on issues in Alaska, and particularly between the border of Southeast Alaska and Canada, what happens up there affects what happens down here. So welcome, Will.
Well, thanks. It's good to be here. Thanks to you and Coastal Cafe for interest in Rivers Without Borders.
So tell me a little bit about your organization, a little bit about yourself and your role. Let's start with your background and how you got here.
Well, I'm the director of Rivers Without Borders. It's a position I've had since 2008, and our organization goes back to about the year 2000. In terms of my own background, I have a master's degree in environmental sciences, and I've been doing conservation work for most of my career, which is now more than a few decades. And I, as I say, I came to this job in the last, been doing this for about a decade now, and love what I do, and feel very privileged to be doing the work that we're doing.
And your offices are based here in Port Townsend.
Well, that's only in part. I'm the director, and I happen to be here. But we have offices in Juneau, Alaska, Petersburg, Alaska, Smithers, BC, and Victoria,
okay.
BC.
So tell us exactly what is it you're doing for our listeners out there that have never heard of your organization.
So Rivers Without Borders is a Canadian and U.S. nonprofit conservation organization. We focus on what we call the transboundary watersheds that are shared by Northwest British Columbia and Southeast Alaska. We elevate awareness of the extraordinary ecological and cultural values of these watersheds, and we work to promote an ecosystem-based approach to thinking about their stewardship and the future of these amazing watersheds. We're talking about six watersheds, again, shared by the province and Alaska. From north to south, it's the Elsak-Tachinchini, the Chilkat, the Taku, the Whiting, the Iskut-Stikine, and the Unik watersheds. And each of these watersheds has some definite similarities. They're all world-class salmon ecosystems. They're remote, they're wild, they're all relatively intact. And several of them, at least, are very much imperiled by proposed headwaters development that's very much threatening their integrity.
And that development, is that normally mining or
it's
logging?
It's almost exclusively mining. And, mm-hmm. of course, mining is what opens up these areas to other development activities as well. But, yes, we are looking at some major mining projects in the headwaters on the Canadian side. And, you know, we're by no means anti-mining, but we are very much pro-intact, thriving salmon ecosystems, and we want to make sure that there's an international conversation about the future of these international ecosystems that have such extraordinary value.
What is it exactly that makes mining a threat to salmon?
Well, mining is, there's multiple concerns. I mean, first of all, again, we have what are currently virtually intact, virtually pristine watersheds thriving, and the reason they are is because they're undeveloped. And when you start talking about mining moving in, you're talking about not only mining itself, but also the roads that come with it, the development of these watersheds, creating infrastructure to bring in more development. We're not saying that's necessarily a bad thing, but we are saying that's a big concern when you balance that with, again, a intact, thriving salmon ecosystem. But mining itself does have big concerns, too. The work in itself creates what we call acid mine drainage, which is a huge problem. This is toxic, acidic water, full of metals, getting into the ecosystem. All too often, it's not being contained within the mining site, and that problem and aquatic life, and particularly salmon, it's a bad combination. We've seen the problem get totally out of hand with mine disasters, like the Mount Polly mine in central British Columbia that had a catastrophic release of its wastewater in 2014. And we're seeing that problem develop more and more. These are mines that are developed and have to contain their toxic waste for centuries. And we're realizing more and more that we just don't have the technology to do that. And again, it's a bad combination. If you want to have intact, thriving salmon ecosystems, it's like a time bomb hanging over them when you introduce mining to the equation.
Did the British Columbian government make any policy changes after the Mount Polley incident?
Well, that's a good question, Aaron, and it's a little hard to answer. I would say that they're talking about policy changes. I would say that they're looking into their environmental assessment review process. They're talking about regulatory oversight improvements, etc. But the truth is, very little has happened. I'd also say that that's been called the worst environmental disaster in Canadian history. There have been no consequences to the mining company behind it after 5 years later, which is kind of amazing. So I don't think we can really... I think it's something of a wake-up call, but I also have to say we're pretty disappointed that we haven't seen more serious reaction to that catastrophic event.
So do the mining companies offer up solutions to this, like some sort of dam technology, water cleaning technology? I have no idea what that would look like, but do you?
You know, my expertise is not mining engineering, and you know, we're about conservation and about taking care of what we've got out there. But I think one of the things that's being talked about more and more is dry stack tailings, as opposed to creating these massive tailings impoundments with dams that, again, in the case of Mount Polley and other examples, failed and released billions of gallons of toxic wastewater into the ecosystem. You know, that's just not a good setup. If you have it dry contained, which is difficult to do in a habitat like we're talking in the Northwest with a lot of precipitation, it's another challenge. But there's certainly better ways to do it, or potentially better ways to do it. But the bottom line is it just didn't work in the case of Mount Polley. We have that concern with other mines. Mining just creates a big industrial footprint in an otherwise pristine environment and opens the door to a lot of problems.
So I would imagine with the 8 or 9% of Canada's gross domestic product that mining's not going anywhere. So... How do you guys work with the mining companies? What's been some positive outcomes from this relationship you've had with the Canadian government and the mining companies over the last decade or so?
Well, I don't know, Aaron, that we've really had any particularly positive outcomes with mining companies. What I want to emphasize is that we're talking about an area that's incredibly remote, that's in many ways amazingly pristine. The Taku watershed, for example, which is the heart of this area we're talking about, is the largest totally intact watershed on the Pacific coast of North America. 4.5 million acres. It's a world-class salmon ecosystem, the top salmon producer for all of Southeast Alaska, just has off-the-charts conservation values. So, you know, the good news is mining has not been part of the picture in this region.
Is there any movement afoot to put mining in that region?
Yes, that's the concern. You know, and again, you asked what is, you know, about positive outcomes with the mining industry. I mean, I don't know that there have been any. We're expressing concern about some massive mining proposals in the headwaters. And again, it's not for us to say whether this is a good thing or a bad thing or whatever, but certainly we think that there needs to be an international conversation about the future of these international watersheds, that we need to be connecting upstream with downstream, that we need to be having an ecosystem-based approach to thinking about stewardship and what's appropriate for these watersheds. So, you know, the real question is this a good place for mining? You know, we know that the planet is running out of really exceptional salmon ecosystems. I mean, we've done a pretty good job of squandering them down here in the Washington State and southward, as you know, and you know, we're putting a lot into trying to bring them back, and that's a good thing. But to the north, we still have a chance to keep what we've already got, and it's really a question of do we want to accept that? Do we want to recognize that we've got something really special and hang on to it, or do we want to open the door to the things like mining that could really change the picture?
I would imagine that the tribes and the native corporations in Alaska and the First Nations in their position, some of them may have actually come from a conflicting place where they may have a stake in mining, but also a stake in commercial fisheries. Is that something you've come across, or has the tribal and First Nations people had an entirely different approach to this?
Well, Aaron, there's no one story here. Each watershed, each issue that we're involved in, and we're involved in a number of them, there's different aspects to it, so we can't really generalize. But I think I can say a few things to give you a sense of the picture here. from a downstream perspective, it's all about the salmon. It's all about commercial fishing, which is doing really well in Southeast. It's the story of it is the economy in Southeast. So there's a real sense of the view of these transboundary watersheds is their lifeblood. You know, they're the source of the fish that are making Southeast Alaska's economy work. So there's a ton of interest in their future and keeping them thriving. And that's across the board, whether we're talking about the commercial fishing industry, whether we're talking about the tribes, whether we're talking about communities, it's pretty much the same story. There's a real sense of we've got something really special here. You know, when you get upstream on the BC side, it's a different view in a way. That area has very few people. There's very few communities up there. Beyond a scattering of First Nations, it's an incredibly unpopulated area. And there's a real sense that that's the mining frontier. You know, BC looks to that area as its industrial future. There's a lot of excitement about opening it up to mining and energy development and so on. So it's a different mindset. Again, it's not whether one's good or one's bad, but it's are they talking? Is there a recognition of the importance from a downstream perspective and a, you know, a dialogue about what's going on here? I would say in general, the commercial fishing industry is totally backs what we're trying to do. I would say all the Alaska tribes, likewise, they're very concerned about what's being proposed in the headwaters. And among the First Nations, I guess it sort of depends on the situation. We are close with some, and others certainly want to see mining development and jobs and so on as well.
Okay. So I want to circle back to the impact of mines directly on salmon. Can you speak to what is actually happening on a physical level to salmon from different toxic inputs into the watershed? What happens, you know, within the salmon's makeup or activities, or how it impacts their behavior?
Well, again, Aaron, I don't want to skirt the question, but I'm certainly not a fisheries expert or a biologist in that regard. I mean, in general, we know that metals in the ecosystem are making it more difficult for the salmon to return to their spawning habitat. We know that across the region, we're seeing more and more impacts coming from multiple causes in salmon, and certainly adding to that with toxins pouring into their environment is not helping them. It's just one more thing, whether we're talking about pH levels or we're talking about warmer temperatures or we're talking about more toxins. None of it's good, and it's cumulative, and it's just, there's no question it's hurting them. We know, for example, that Chinook salmon in the region are in trouble, and I can't tell you exactly what it is, but I can tell you that we know wild salmon need wild rivers. We know they need clean water, cold water, and certainly that's the kind of thing we're trying to encourage, as opposed to take chances with that stuff like mining, for example, would bring to the ecosystem.
Okay. Thank you, Will. So if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Will Patrick, who is the Executive Director of Rivers Without Borders, and we're talking about shared watersheds between Canada, the United States, specifically Alaska, and potential impacts on salmon. I wanted to ask you, what is it you're focusing your attention on right now? What's the big activity you're working on at this moment?
I mentioned the Taku watershed earlier, and I described it as the heart of this region we're talking about. And again, I'll state again that Taku is 4.5 million acres. It's totally intact and virtually pristine. Again, the largest totally intact watershed on the Pacific coast of North America, and again, the largest salmon producer for Southeast Alaska.
When you say intact, what exactly do you mean by intact?
Well, what I mean is no roads, no dams, no significant development within the watershed at all. There is one exception to that, and that's called the Tolskwa Chief Mine. And the Tolskwa Chief is a mine that was abandoned in 1957. It's almost on the Alaska border, so it's way up in the far northwest corner of British Columbia, relatively close to Juneau. And that mine is notorious in the region. It's been dumping acidic, toxic wastewater into the Taku now for decades. British Columbia has long viewed, its approach to that problem has been to talk about putting a new mine in its place, which we've always thought was kind of a pro-mining and narrow approach to dealing with the problem, as opposed to just resolving it. So this has been a real flashpoint in the region. Alaskans have been very concerned about this. The Taku River Tlingit First Nation, it's in their traditional territory. They've been dealing with this problem now for decades. They've taken it to court. And again, Alaskans have been calling for it to be cleaned up now for decades as well. But again, British Columbia has said the only way we're going to do that is by putting a new mine in its place, which we've seen from the old mining that it's an area with a sulfide ore body. It's going to create the acid mine drainage problems. It's a terrible place for a mine. It's immediately above the best, most significant salmon habitat in the entire Taku watershed, which more or less straddles the international border. Some outstanding salmon spawning and rearing habitat in that area. So this has been a huge issue for us. We've been on this for years, and within the last year, the British Columbia government has finally said it's time to deal with this problem once and for all, and they've embarked on a planning process for closure and cleanup of that long-polluting Tolskwa-Chief mine. So we're very heartened by that. This is after two bankruptcies of other proponents going in and trying to pursue what had been the British Columbia approach to the problem. The fact that British Columbia has finally reckoned that maybe we can't get a new mine going here and maybe we should be listening to the First Nation and the Alaskans on this issue and it's time to do something, that's a good thing. Our concern right now is that it doesn't have the money to do this. There's lots of legal complexities and, of course, government priorities can change. So it's a great time to keep up the pressure on this. So we are doing all we can to keep stakeholders engaged. We're trying to keep Alaska commercial fishermen calling for a clean Taku and in turn getting their elected representatives on the Alaska side to lean on British Columbia to do that. We're trying to do what we can to keep the Taku River Tlingit engaged. And we're optimistic that we can see a real resolution of this problem. But at the same time, you know, we're a long ways away from celebrating.
As far as mine cleanups go, I know it can be done. It's been done here in Washington State with the Holden mine of Lake Chelan. It is expensive, but it can be done. It's just a matter of getting the right players and lining up the planets, I assume.
Yeah, and Tolskwa-Chief is a relatively small mine. So this was an underground mine. You're absolutely right. Dealing with acid mine drainage is difficult and expensive. But again, in this case, in the world of mining issues, this one's pretty small. And what it's going to take is just commitment and partnerships and getting it done. And again, we're excited that that's the route we've embarked on or we're seeing right now. But, you know, the cynical side of us says we're going to have to really keep up the pressure and make sure this really happens. So we'll see.
So what other issues are you working on?
Well, besides the Taku, we have two other priority issues at the moment. One is in the southern transboundary region in the Unik watershed. There's a proposal called the Kerr-Selferetz-Mitchell project, the KSM mine. And KSM would be a gigantic mine. It would be one of the largest mining projects ever attempted on the planet. It's in the Unik watershed headwaters. It's not far from Misty Fjords National Monument. Again, like Tolskwa-Chief, very close to the Alaska border. There's a lot of concern about that. The scale of this project is just mind-boggling. And the Unik is, again, another world-class salmon river system. Ketchikan is not far below this area. And, of course, Ketchikan calls itself the salmon capital of the world. So it's another important area to be having a discussion about. Is this the right thing for this watershed, a mine of this scale? It's both underground and open pit. It's opening up an area that's incredibly wild and remote. And as with mining in the Taku, if mining started there, it's going to bring other projects with it and open up that area to more development. And so that's a big concern to us. The other area, Aaron, that we're particularly involved in is on the north end of the transboundary region in the Chilkat watershed. And in that particular instance, we're looking at an Alaskan mining project way up in the headwaters of the Chilkat.
Where is the Chilkat?
The Chilkat flows out of the northwest corner of British Columbia down by Haines, Alaska.
So that's the northern part of the Panhandle by Skagway?
Correct, yes. Yeah, and the Chilkat is an interesting watershed. It has the world's only bald eagle preserve, which is in itself an amazing thing. It's there because it has the largest congregation of eagles in the world that come there because the Chilkat has a characteristic of freezing late in the season compared to other rivers in the area, so that's why the eagles come there. Klukwan Indian Village is also on the Chilkat. Klukwan is opposing the proposed mining in the headwaters. The city, the town of Haines is mixed on whether or not mining is appropriate for that region. But there's lots of it's a great time to be involved with in that area and see that community thinking about what it wants for the future of the Chilkat Valley. As with the other mines we talked about, there's again concerns about the sulfide ore bodies and about the probability of acid mine drainage, and again, is this the right mix with salmon ecosystems? That particular project is in the exploratory stage right now, and so it's a good time for discussion, and that's exactly what we're engaged in with that community.
So with Haines, you said that the view on the possibility of a mine is mixed. Would there be any jobs generated for the people who live in Haines if a mine did go into that valley?
Yeah, for sure there would be, Aaron. How many, and how many would go to locals versus how many would go to outsiders? I mean, those are good questions, and that's always comes up. I think Haines is changing its sort of identity from having a very much a traditional Alaskan resource economy to a greater recognition that it's an extraordinary setting for that community. There's more and more interest in it from a recreational and tourism and perspective. And again, it's also the Chilkat is a source of the salmon that's important for that segment of the economy there as well, and not to mention other parts of the region. So, yeah, sure, mining could bring some good things to that area, of course, and it could also bring some very negative things. And yeah, I think, from our perspective, the most important thing is that there's a discussion about it. There's a vision. There's a real sense of, you know, what's there and what's at risk, and putting that together and figuring out what's best.
Kent, do you think a community like Haines and a mine could coexist in a way that's not detrimental to the watershed and the downriver ecosystem?
Well, you asked me, do I think it could? I suppose in theory, yeah. I think in general we're talking about. I think in the three examples that we've been talking about here, I don't think mining is the appropriate mix for the ecosystems, given what's there and given the threats that mining would pose. That's not to say it couldn't work. That's not to say, you know, it could be a different story. But I think history has shown us, and I personally think when you look at the big picture, you've got such an asset in those wild thriving ecosystems as they are, that to add mining to the mix would be folly.
Yeah. I, from what I gather, the track record for the mining industry is not that good.
Well, I would agree with that.
Yeah. So, you've been listening to Coastal Cafe. I've been with Will Patrick. And, Will, is there anything you'd like to add before we close? Anything you'd like to say?
Well, again, Aaron, I want to thank you very much for the questions and for thinking about what we do. And I'd be happy to talk to anybody. I'm here in Port Townsend, which is a great place to be for our work because it kind of puts us between Seattle, Victoria, and Vancouver, which is where most of my travels are, or sort of the hub of Alaska and all that. But there's a lot of folks who care about this region that live here, and I love to get insights and ideas from people and tell people what we're doing. So welcome, get in touch, and love to have this kind of conversation further.
And so that's Rivers Without Borders, and you do have a website, a web presence, I assume, so people can find you on the internet.
Yes.
Okay, so you've been listening to Coastal Cafe. My name's Aaron Barnett. I'd like to give a big shout out to our program director, Larry Stein, our production engineer, Jared Dufresne. And I'd like to give out another shout-out to the Tlingit band Ku'ik, which provides the music for the beginning and end of this show. Thank you.